Welcome to a cloudy episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast in which we discuss real-life SDN solutions and controllers that work in production networks. I'm Ivan Pepelniak, blogging and publishing SDN rants at ipspace.net, and today I'm lucky enough to have not one, but two co-hosts, the first one being David G. David, how are you doing today?
Really well, thank you, Ivan. Quite busy on a load of projects this week, nothing too exciting, but I'm focusing quite heavily at the moment on web frameworks for a few ideas. I'm playing with Python and Django and a various few other things, so I'm well, thank you.
So you are exploring the programming side of things.
Absolutely, yeah, and how to almost kind of hack together, some kind of an API for really simple tasks without kind of installing too many tiered and interrelated systems. So I'm just kind of exploring, I think, MVC frameworks and things like that.
That reminds me of what I'm doing these days, programming Braintree payments integration onto my website. Why don't we just hire programmers to do it?
Nice.
And my second co-host is Bob McCouch. Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ivan. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Apart from the Braintree integration. But that's going along well, so I'm almost done.
Wonderful.
So what are you doing these days?
Well, I'm actually getting ready to start a new job in a couple of weeks, so I'm sort of wrapping things up with customer projects where I am now, and getting ready for a new role that's going to be actually a lot more data center focused, so I'm really looking forward to that, where I'll have an opportunity to dive a lot more deeply into server virtualization, storage, and hopefully more network virtualization and SDN.
Oh, you won't need all that. It will all be software-defined. Don't worry about that.
Oh, excellent. It'll be automated as well, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, speaking about software-defined, there are some controllers on the market that are actually production-grade, and they are called cloud orchestration systems. Some of them are open source, and everyone is talking about one of them, and you know that's OpenStack. But while everyone is talking about OpenStack, there's another open source product that gets way less press time, even though it's being used by some of the very large public and private clouds. You know what I'm talking about. It's CloudStack. And we're very happy to have today's guest, Chiradeep Vital, who is architect and distinguished engineer at Citrix and responsible for the overall CloudStack architecture. Did I get that right, Chiradeep?
That's right. Thanks for inviting me, Ivan.
Oh, thanks for being with us. So, how did you get into this cloud orchestration thing? What were you doing in your previous life, and how did you get into the cloudy part of the business?
Yeah, quite by accident, actually. I started my career in Nortel in Canada. I was working on ATM switches and phone switches and all that kind of stuff. Moved into optical networking at ONI here in the Valley. Got acquired by Ciena. And then a few startups later, I got tired of networking. So I joined some enterprise software startups. And then I got tempted into joining a tiny startup called Cloud.com in 2008. And the idea for Cloud.com was to help their customers build clouds like Amazon did. And that was the lofty vision. And as a result, about 3 years later, Citrix acquired Cloud.com. And I've been working on cloud and cloud-related products in Citrix for the past 3 years.
So what are you doing at Citrix? What exactly are you doing within the CloudStack ecosystem, if you wish?
Right. So Citrix sells a product called Citrix Cloud Platform, which is based on the open source Apache CloudStack project. We also sell support for this product, and we sell surrounding software like a portal, a business manager, and application layer orchestration. So I work on all parts of this software. I also work with other parts of Citrix. For example, there's the Netscaler group, which works on load balancing and software-defined networking. And there's various other products like Zen Mobile and Byte Mobile, which work in the mobile space.
We've been mentioning CloudStack a number of times in the last 2 minutes. We haven't said what it is. So how would you define what is CloudStack?
CloudStack is an IaaS platform, and it's pretty full-featured. And, you know, as you mentioned, the nearest competitors would be OpenStack and Eucalyptus. And it got its start by wanting to help its customers, you know, build IaaS clouds just like EC2. And so as a result, I think the initial focus was heavily on public clouds. And then we had quite a few early successes, such as, you know, there was Tata Telecom, Korea Telecom, British Telecom. And then as the EC2 cloud became bigger and bigger, we found that people were wanting to move their workloads off of EC2 onto private clouds. And so we got some successes there, such as, you know, Zynga and Edmunds and Nokia. So, you know, as a product, it's a full-featured IaaS stack. And then it's production ready and it's mature. And it's been around for about 5 to 6 years.
But as I looked at your documentation, you are effectively using, for example, hypervisors from other vendors. So you are sitting on top of the hypervisor and orchestrating it. Is that correct?
That is correct. I think in our 1.0 product, we built a hypervisor also, which is based on Xen. And that clearly was not a great idea at that time. And so we switched our focus to supporting only commercial hypervisors.
So which hypervisors do you support these days?
So all the commercial ones. So Citrix Xen Server, vSphere, Hyper-V, and KVM. As well as you can do bare metal orchestration and container orchestration using LXC.
Just LXC or Docker as well?
Just LXC for now.
Any plans for Docker support?
Yes, so there's somebody in the community putting in support for Docker, and I'm not sure that's ready yet, but there's a bit of a challenge with Docker because it's more of a platform or an application layer orchestration. So it doesn't fit very neatly into an infrastructure as a service product. So it works very nicely on top of IaaS, but it kind of hard to fit in a regular IaaS function.
That's true. It's more like PaaS and above.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Jaideep, how would you say CloudStack is different from OpenStack? When would you use one? When would you use the other? Well, of course you would use CloudStack, but still.
Yeah. There's a few areas of difference, you know, ranging from how the project is governed to the architecture and the goals. The primary goal, I would say, of Apache CloudStack is just to make things work, as opposed to getting more vendors to contribute code. So, you know, it just works under a wide range of hardware, hypervisors, networking, and storage gear. And, you know, most people, because of this focus on just getting things work, you know, most people are able to get their CloudStack cloud up and running in a few hours. And, you know, if they're very good at configuring the switches and storage, they can get it to scale quite nicely and very quickly with the minimum of fuss.
So, Chirdeep, you mentioned integration with bare metal, possibly jumping a little bit ahead here to ask specifically about networking integration with bare metal versus servers, but is there... I'm assuming you do have integration for network services separation, interacting with or provisioning bare metal equipment. Is that a fair assumption?
That's correct. That's correct.
And do you have, what kind of specific requirements do you have there? Are there particular APIs that you have, you know, that you're kind of already built for, or you know, do you support, you know, screen scraping with tools, things like that? I mean, how do you? What sorts of capabilities do you have for interacting with various types of equipment?
Yeah, that's a sore point with any networking equipment.
Sorry, I had to go right there right away. Sorry.
Yeah.
Throw the hand grenade in.
Right. So to be honest, that you know, advanced networking features is being built right now. It's probably scheduled for the 4.5 release. The current release is 4.4, and so it's right now it's targeting a couple of switches, which you know, specific customers are interested in. I think we're looking at the 410 switch and possibly the Cumulus. So the Cumulus is easy. You know, it's got a REST API. Or we can even run Python code on it. The 410, unfortunately, we're forced to do expect or something like that, trying to get away from it. In fact, I have a call with Dell today to discuss that with them.
But if we take a step back,
sure.
There are two ways people are implementing tenant segments today. It's either VLANs or overlay virtual networks. What are you using in CloudStack?
We actually have three separate ways of doing it, or more than two. I'm not sure how familiar you folks are with EC2, but when Amazon EC2 started, but they did not have, you know, virtual private clouds or private segments. Everybody was in the same IP space, and then they used some other mechanism to enforce isolation.
Access lists.
Security groups or access lists. So that's, we support that. It's the so-called EC2 classic mode. We call that a basic networking. Basic because it doesn't require you to fiddle with switches. It just works based on distributed firewall in the hypervisor. So that's basic networking. And once you move to advanced networking, which is very much like the Amazon VPC model, in fact, it borrows a whole range of features from that model. You can use VLANs. You can use SDN, or there's a built-in overlay controller within CloudStack as well, which uses GRE tunnels. With respect to SDN overlays, I mean, people have built integrations with Nicira, Big Switch, Midokura, Juniper, Contrail, and I'm missing one more, Stratosphere, some out of Japan. So, you know, it's very easy to plug in additional isolation support or networking support into CloudStack, and these vendors have jumped in and contributed their own integrations with CloudStack.
So if, for example, then we've got a legacy estate and that's got a very kind of specific and kind of quirky API that no vendor is going to want to support, is it fairly easy for a user to pick up some templates and actually kind of create something themselves? Or is this like a closed community?
So currently, it requires writing Java code.
Okay.
What I've seen is that that's not too much of a burden. We've had actual customers contributing their own integrations. For example, we had a university down in Brazil contribute their UCS integration into CloudStack.
Okay. Interesting stuff. And probably diving a little bit too deep here. So how would you go about writing something and testing? I mean, would you say just go for a different, you know, kind of dev and test type environment, or does it run something like OSGI where you can, you know, kind of stop and reload code and unload modules and, you know, update on the fly without kind of restarting the whole environment?
No, you would have to there's no OSGI support. I think that was a long discussion in the community, and we decided not to support that. But yeah, it's fairly easy to do that. If I recall, for instance, the Nicira support, I mean, they had it up and running in 2 weeks. So it's not terribly difficult. There's a few API calls you need to implement. Stopping and restarting the server doesn't, you would do it in a test environment, obviously. That shouldn't take too long.
Okay, I think one more probably silly question. Obviously, with OpenStack, you know, most people have heard of Neutron. Is there any kind of name or you know, kind of pet name you've given to the networking part of CloudStack?
No, but the CloudStack model is, it's more of a monolith. So everything runs inside the same JVM, and then you scale out that JVM into multiple cluster them to get the scale. So, but there are, you know, equivalent modules within the code, and you know, typically people call it the network guru, which handles the networking part.
Right.
And I was going to ask how that, in terms of sort of how you're staffing the project, you know, how does that break down? I mean, I know, you know, I'm not intimately familiar with the development details of OpenStack. I haven't really gotten myself involved in that project in any way, but I'm aware that there seem to be kind of you know, the groups seem to be very focused on, okay, well, we're working on Neutron, and we're working on, you know, this piece and that piece. Is your development effort kind of more closely integrated there, or are there, you know, still teams that are very tightly focused on one module and sort of I don't want to say oblivious, but sort of you know, not closely plugged into the other modules?
It's true, you know, some people tend to specialize in networking or specialize in storage, but generally people put their fingers in every part of the code, so, except the UI. But, you know, we have people working one day networking, one day in storage. It's not too hard.
Yet again, stepping a little bit back, I guess apart from the KVM/Xen world, where you can implement anything you wish on Linux, with other hypervisors, you're probably limited to whatever services the hypervisor can support, right?
That's correct.
So how would you, for example, implement the security groups with vSphere?
Yeah, so in the vSphere and in Hyper-V case, we do not support security groups.
So you just support the basic networks with VLANs or whatever they have, and then you put VMs on there that have multiple interfaces to implement routing and DHCP and firewalling and things like that.
That is correct. Yeah, so vSphere is interesting because it tends to be more popular in the private cloud as opposed to the public cloud. And once you're in the data center, now they're worried about, well, how do I integrate with my legacy VLAN infrastructure, my legacy storage, my legacy this and legacy that. And so VLANs tends to become the default. And they're typically not interested in anything else. Whereas if you move to the public cloud arena, then they're interested in scale, they're interested in high degree of automation. And so they tend to be more interested in the overlay techniques.
And what would you say of operating installed base or production install base, do you have any sense for kind of how the various networking types are being used? You know, so is there actually a large portion of customers that are using that basic model that's just kind of everything's open and we're going to use ACLs on our, you know, on our VMs versus some of the other models? I mean, what's popular? You've got kind of a good pulse, I think, on, you know, what what's actually happening in deployment. So what do you see
so
there?
We have two or three segments of customers. So if you look at what we call the Web 2.0 style, so the Zingas, the Orbits, the Spotify, they cut their teeth on the cloud, either on Amazon or any other cloud, and so they're very comfortable with the ACL model of scaling their networking. But then, if you move into the more traditional enterprises, they don't understand it. They can't grok it. It doesn't fit their regular operational model, so they fall back to VLANs.
Hey, we get a little chill down our spine every time we hear that everybody's in the same subnet. It's automatic.
No. So they do use VLANs for isolation. So, you know, either each VLAN is a separate project or each VLAN is a separate account or anything like that. And then, you know, CloudStack tries to be a little intelligent. So if you, you know, deploy a network, we'll allocate a VLAN. And then if you stop using it, we'll just reclaim that VLAN and then so that it's free for somebody else to use. So we try to optimize the use of your VLANs. And then we even support, you know, PVLANs if you really want to, you know, optimize the use of your VLANs. If you're really running out of VLANs, you could start using PVLANs for further isolation.
Okay, so quick question then around the networking piece and how the automation happens. So, sorry, no, I need to apologize. I've not kind of really deep kind of dived into the documentation just yet. But let's say we're in a position where we want CloudStack to provision some VXLAN segments on a device and maybe some IP gateways. So is this a template-driven approach where we're expected to provide some details and a pool of resources? And can CloudStack go off and actually get information from a device and make sense of it and filter it and I guess pass information out? Or is it quite simple in terms of we just provide some resources and sequentially CloudStack will assign and allocate those resources as it sees fit?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. So what you do is once you if you have an admin API and an admin GUI, so what you do is you start telling CloudStack about all these resources, and then it starts, you know, putting them in its free pool. And as the end user API calls come in to create networks or create VMs or create storage, CloudStack will use those admin provided resources to allocate virtual machine storage and networks.
Okay. Right.
So, for example, in vSphere and Hyper-V world, or let's just focus on vSphere, you would probably connect to vCenter and then whatever is available under vCenter, you would orchestrate that, right?
That is correct, yes.
So if they have 1,000 VLANs, you can use 1,000 VLANs. If they have this many storage subsystems, you can use that. They have this many hypervisors, you can use that, and that's it.
And that's it. That's correct, yeah.
On the other hand, if you have Xen or KVM, what are you using there for the networking part of the infrastructure? Are you using the Linux bridge? Are you using OpenVSwitch? Are you using something completely different?
Yeah, so we support both. So for instance, if you wanted on Xen server, if you wanted, for instance, VLANs and ACLs, so then we would use the bridge. If you wanted to use just VLANs, then we use the OpenVSwitch, mainly because it's better supported on Xen server. On KVM, on the other hand, the Linux bridge is the best supported vSwitch. And so that's the default vSwitch on KVM. Although you could use OpenVSwitch, for instance, if you were willing to patch the kernel.
Oh, thank you.
So we're talking about really lots of different technologies that are all available that CloudStack can orchestrate and manage. I'm wondering that, you know, I think as I think of all of those different products, right, and the way you do networking in vSphere and the way you could do networking with Linux bridges versus open vSwitch and those sorts of things, and even the different hypervisors, clearly there's a lot of different sort of implementation methods to do those things. So does CloudStack sort of create an abstraction layer that magically knows how to command each of those various resources to get to the same requested policy or configuration, or is that up to the administrator to know, you know, okay, well, if I'm deploying this kind of tenant or environment, I need to configure my Linux bridges in this way, and I need to configure my my VMs in that way. Is that where does the translation into all each of those different technologies and implementation methods happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when it comes to the hypervisor configuration, the CloudStack is the master. It knows pretty much what to do, where to do, and how to do it. Now, if you wanted to integrate other pieces of the networking infrastructure, for instance, if you wanted to configure your load physical switches, your physical load balancers, or your physical firewalls, then CloudStack says, well, I really don't know how to do that. Why don't you write some code to do that? And so that's where we have a plugin architecture. So if you think of, for instance, CloudStack says, okay, I want to create a network. And so it says, I want to pick VLAN 120. So now it knows, you know, how to configure VLAN 120 on the chosen hypervisor, but it may not know how to configure VLAN 120 on the load balancer, or it may not know how to configure VLAN 120 on the physical switch or on the firewall. And so folks write plugin code to intercept those pieces of the state machine and then go off and configure the networking system as appropriate. So for instance, if you wanted a physical firewall, you could use the Juniper SRX. If you wanted a physical load balancer, you could use the F5 load balancer or the Citrix NetScaler load balancer, mm-hmm. or the Palo Alto firewall, for instance. And so these folks have contributed this code, and it exists as plugins in the code.
And what do you have a repository of some sort for people to share those plugins that they've written?
That's right. It's all, everybody checks in into the same main repository. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And then it gets, you know, tested every day, depending on the level of testing they have contributed.
Okay, a bit of a curveball one maybe. So for companies that have very strict departments, so you might have a retail company that's got its own InfoSec department where they don't mind, let's say, kind of guys provisioning virtual machines and, you know, provisioning resources, but they don't want anybody messing around with, you know, some of the firewalls and some of the load balancers and all that kind of thing. So you might be in a situation where those companies might provide like a gateway or an API to another automation system. Have you come across that before? And you know, is it something that's quite feasible from a CloudStack perspective?
That's feasible from a CloudStack perspective, but what we find is that enterprises start building their own portals on top of CloudStack, and then they just rely on CloudStack to orchestrate the hypervisor part, and then lead the other parts to the higher layer orchestration system.
Okay, so that then suggests then that there's some kind of RBAC or some, you know, role-based kind of control into cloud stack. So can you explain how that works? Or is that the case or is that not the case?
There is a role-based control. It is based pretty much on the API, like, you know, this user can access that API kind of system. But the higher layer orchestrator, it just understands the cloud stack end user API. So the end user tends to make API calls into the higher layer orchestrator, and then that orchestrator then calls cloud stack to make specific VM level calls. It doesn't tend to be too complicated, but that's how they tend to influence or implement their own workflows in the system.
Okay. I think what I was trying to get straight in my own head is it's kind of normal in some states where, or in some companies, sorry, where one device might be used for several things, where administrators, you know, do not want somebody playing with one ACL or one firewall list or an object, but they don't mind them playing with something else. And I was just trying to get in my head if you've got methods of containing that down, but I think you've just answered that one. It's all in the API.
That's right.
Yeah, so I mean, in that case, and so are you able to be a bit granular with that? So you can use this API call, but you can't, you can filter things out from the parameters that you're passing across. And that sounds kind of advanced, but I mean, is there any kind of that feature set built in?
Not yet, but that's coming.
Okay, thank you.
Now that we started talking about the APIs, if I step back again and take a look at the bigger picture. So whatever is underneath the cloud stack will provide whatever services it can, but northbound from the cloud stack, the API is always the same, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So I could, for example, migrate my workload from a vSphere-based cloud into another, let's say, KVM-based cloud, and use the same orchestration calls to set up the VMs, virtual networks, and so on.
Absolutely. And, you know, in one cloud, you could use VLANs. In the second cloud, you could use your overlay techniques. In one cloud, you could use different hypervisors. You could use different storage. Yeah, that's all possible.
By the way, talking about different hypervisors, can I mix hypervisors in the same cloud?
Yes, absolutely. Typically, that's done with VLANs because...
Of course.
Getting one overlay technique to work with multiple hypervisors is always challenging.
But it is theoretically possible to have some vSphere hosts and some Xen hosts in the same cloud.
Oh, yeah. Our customers do that all the time.
Now, I'm always wondering why someone would do that, but it's nice to know it works.
Well, sometimes it's, cost perspective. They want, hey, you guys are the test dev, so you just use the Xen server or KVM piece, or the production runs on vSphere. I've seen even one customer thinking that, hey, in my VPC, I got the web tier running on LXC, I got my app tier running on Xen server, and I got my database tier running on bare metal. Let's do that. I mean, we can support that, but that's the level of experimentation that I've seen some of our customers do.
Oh, so you... No, you just gave me a great idea. So you can use the same cloud orchestration system to run both dev and production environment. And right. When you're done in dev, you just move things over to production.
Right.
And then, of course, you would want to use Xen or whatever for dev so that you don't pay for licensing. And you would use vSphere for production for whatever stability reasons.
Correct, yeah. Or whatever your internal policies are. Yeah.
That's cool.
That is cool.
That is very good.
Now, if, on the other hand, I want to move my workload from cloud A to cloud B, obviously I have to recreate the VMs, I have to recreate the virtual networks, I have to recreate the connectivity, I have to recreate all the network services. And yes, I can do that with the API, but is there any tool that I could use to do that so that I don't have to make my own API calls?
That's a great question. I actually... prototyped a CloudFormation-like tool. I call it StackMate. You can find it on GitHub. But there's other people implementing. There's a company out there called, there's a product or a project called Apache Brooklyn, which can do that too. And there's various other commercial providers that can help you do that. But the only open source ones I know of are the StackMate thing, which I prototyped, and then Apache Brooklyn.
And the commercial ones would be things like Cloudify.
Yeah, Cloudify is one. And then Citrix themselves acquired a recent one called Scale Extreme. And then there's others like, I believe, oh, the names are slipping. RightScale definitely can help you do that. They have very large hybrid deployments where one, the private cloud is, for instance, CloudStack, and then the public cloud is EC2.
So they even work with different APIs.
That's correct, yeah.
That's also interesting.
Yeah.
Now, if we go back to networking, I'm looking at your documentation on cloudstack.apache.org for people who are listening to this podcast. And there's this huge list of networking features that you support, from the basic and advanced networks that we covered. And then there are things like Elastic and portable IPs. What are those?
So Elastic IPs are an attempt to provide the feature that EC2 provides with Elastic IPs. And the reason why it's called portable IPs is because the semantics are slightly different. But the idea is that if you have a failure in one availability zone and you want to move that workload to a surviving availability zone, you don't want to change the public IP on which you provide the service. So the portable IP feature lets you move that IP from one availability zone to another.
And you would need a VLAN between the availability zones to make it work from the networking perspective, right?
Yeah, so the very cleverly we leave the actual implementation up to the service provider.
Oh yeah, of course.
Because it can be simple or complicated depending on how they've architected their network.
So you're effectively just calling an API telling someone, hey, we have this portable IP, make it work.
Exactly, yeah.
So I could implement this by using, for example, a host route in BGP.
Yes, and I've seen people do exactly that, yeah.
No, that's a scalable way of moving IPs. I like that.
Yeah.
By the way, what would you use to implement like IP failover within a high availability cluster? So let's say I have two database servers and one fails and the other one wants to take over the IP address of the first one.
Yeah, so CloudStack has a feature called secondary IPs. So what you can do is you can assign secondary IPs to each virtual machine. And so what you could do is that once one fails or you detect a failure in one of them, you could then reassign that IP to the failover one. CloudStack also has built-in, you know, fast restart. So if VM is down, then we will try and restart it if there are resources available.
But if I want to move that IP to the second virtual machine, I have to make a CloudStack API call to move it.
That's correct, yes.
So it's not like I could tell CloudStack, hey, you have these three virtual machines and one of them should have this IP address.
No, that feature is not done correctly. But if you wanted that feature, you just welcome on the community to suggest that. And then somebody will be interested enough to go and implement that.
Oh, thank you. And then going down the list, we already mentioned the private VLANs and security groups, which yeah. Only work in Xen and KVM, right?
Private VLAN also works. Security groups only works in Xen and KVM, but PVLAN works across Xen and vSphere.
Is there any plan to support the security groups now on Hyper-V and vSphere? Because they both have now access control lists in Hypervisor.
Not currently. Perhaps in vSphere first and Hyper-V later. Hyper-V is new. So I think the community is just still learning what the needs of the Hyper-V users are. And so it depends on how fast that adoption goes.
And then going down the list, you have the global and IP load balancing. So how are those implemented?
So let me just go here. So if the entire list is like, you know, DHCP, DNS, access control list, perimeter firewalls, NAT technologies, IPv6, load balancers, VPN. And as I said, we have a plugin model to support any special hardware or software appliance that you might be interested in. with respect to load balancers, out of the box, what we do is we spin up a Linux appliance. It's a Debian 7 Linux appliance, which has been hardened. And there's HA proxy running on that, and that will provide you load balancing. That appliance, incidentally, will also do inter-segment routing, the perimeter firewalls, the NAT, and the site-to-site VPN.
Oh, so it's like open source VShield Edge.
Yeah, or you could say it's NFV, because we also orchestrate the configuration of that appliance, and then we also do the lifecycle management of that appliance.
Right, so it just provides each cloud with essentially a network services platform.
That's right, and that's sorts of things, right. Right, and that's on a per VPC basis is one of them. You could even do two of them and do VRRP between them, and CloudStack will automatically do the VRRP failover for you as well.
So effectively, what you are showing to the end user is you have these APIs. This is how you start load balancing. This is how you start DNS. This is how you start DHCP. This is how you do NAT.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there are no plugins, you just automatically spin up the VM. You take care that the VM is up and running. You configure it behind the scenes. And the user doesn't even know what you're doing.
He doesn't even see that VM. All he gets is the feel for the service, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is only it the admin VM?
Sees that VM. Pardon me?
Sorry. About to say, is that same VM? Is it hosted? Is it a separate machine that's kind of masqueraded away from prying eyes, or is it actually on like on one of the CloudStack machines?
It's one of the CloudStack machines, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But what you could do is you could use a feature in CloudStack to allocate them to special hypervisors.
Right.
So you could have like network services cluster where you would only run these VMs.
That's correct.
Hey, I like this more and more.
It's growing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a completely different kind of question now. So sometimes I've been involved in the past where companies have built something like this and they're not completely confident around open source. They don't have the confidence for their NetOps team to support something. So are there a number of kind of publicly available support options and kind of like, you know, paid for support subscriptions with this, or is this just a community effort at the moment?
Citrix provides a full-featured implementation called Citrix Cloud Platform, which works on this. So it's support-based. There's other companies which, for example, there's ShapeBlue, which provides service for this. And I seem to recall that there's a couple of systems integrators also that will come out and implement it for you.
Okay.
And what sort of adoption are you seeing in enterprise versus the public cloud or web 2.0 type environments that you mentioned earlier? Is it which population seems to be partial toward CloudStack?
I think it's between the if you take the enterprise, which includes web 2.0 and service provider. Between them, it's 50-50 right now.
Hmm.
But I see the enterprise growing faster than the public. I mean, the public, the existing public ones are growing, but the rate of new customers adopting tends to be enterprise. And that's probably a reflection of the strength of the Citrix sales force rather than anything else.
Mm-hmm. You see that for just kind of dev environments or production as well? Because, I mean, you know, typically we see a lot of kind of VMware in production and much to Ivan's comment, and then dev might be something else. So are you seeing a good split between those kind of environments too? A good share?
Yeah, it's a good share. Typically, I think the enterprise, because they're new to cloud, they run dev test on CloudStack for a year or so before they're finally comfortable enough to, they got to streamline their operations, they got to get comfortable with support options before they switch to production.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Now, when talking about migrating to production, is it possible to sort of give some, let's say, vSphere resources to CloudStack and still run the other parts of the same vCenter clusters using the traditional vCenter or even vCloud Director?
I think so, because what you provision into CloudStack is the data center. which I've created in vCenter. And so vCenter is managing data centers, which you haven't told CloudStack about. We will not touch those.
So effectively, you have to create a data center, and then you say, this one is managed by CloudStack.
That's correct, yeah.
So whatever hypervisors, whatever storage is in that data center, it's owned by CloudStack. And you may have other data centers that are owned by whoever else.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and then as the VMware administrator, you might move hosts between data centers.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a smooth migration strategy.
Yeah, and then you know you can even use DBS in vSphere. You can use Nexus 1000V. You can use the ASA 1000V. So vSphere has a lot of options. You can do PVLANs.
You can probably also use the high availability clusters and...
Yes, absolutely. You can use DRS.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Bob, David, any more questions?
I'm good. Actually, I'm just scrolling through lots and lots of documentation, but I think everybody's covered.
Yeah, there's a lot of good documentation out there. I also noticed...
loads.
when I was looking for a little bit of prep for this podcast, I also discovered that on SlideShare, there's... you know, if you just search for CloudStack, there's a lot of presentations with a lot of good data in them as well.
Yeah, SlideShare is a good one. And there's a CloudStack University on the CloudStack wiki, which, you know, tries to go, you know, step-by-step CloudStack 101.
I have to say, I really like the simplicity of the CloudStack. The Apache.org site is really, really clean. There's not much that gets in the way in terms of, you know, kind of ads or kind of weird graphics or anything. this is kind of iterating over something that you already spoke about, and it's a really, really good question, and one that I think I probably need a little bit more on in terms of CloudStack kind of running other you know, multiple hypervisors, and you've got vCenter somewhere in the midst of things, and that kind of behavior between them. So back to the question, if we've got we've got CloudStack operating some ESXi hosts and some KVM stuff. We've also got vCenter trying to operate those same hosts. So in my own mind, is there a bi-directional relationship between, you know, CloudStack and VMware? So, you know, one's reading, you know, triggering the APIs of the other. Is it really just a case of CloudStack has things assigned to it and vCenter has things assigned to it as per the, you know, whatever you tell CloudStack about? I might have missed the earlier point. I'm just trying to get it into my head. And sorry, guys, it's been a long day for me. I'm absolutely worn out. So I'm just trying to get things straight in my head.
This is actually a very important question, because as a vCenter administrator, you want to do stuff in emergencies or your regular operations, which you want to make sure you're not messing up CloudStack's
state synchronization, right? Isn't it? You know, like keeping that state consistent across everything.
Exactly. In the case of vSphere, CloudStack respects the vCenter administrator, and then will try its darndest best to respect what you did, whether you deleted VMs or you took VMs out into maintenance or put hosts into maintenance or did DRS. CloudStack will say, "Oh, Mr. vCenter, you know best, and so I will update my state according to what you think the state of the system is." And so that's something we pay a lot of attention to make sure that we're not whacking VMs when we don't need to.
Thanks for that. It's one of the things that really stuck out in my kind of head. I just needed to get clarity. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So I did just come up with one additional question here, Chirdeep. In looking at the CloudStack website at cloudstack.apache.org, it points out that the APIs are compatible with AWS, with EC2 and S3, quote, for organizations that wish to deploy hybrid clouds. So does that mean that you can, in fact, also deploy, say, EC2 instances through CloudStack? Am I understanding that right? Maybe I missed that somewhere in the conversation earlier.
So what we do is that, so if you're, for example, moving workloads from EC2 and you say, well, I got this whole tooling built around the EC2 API, you can run this proxy on CloudStack, which will accept your EC2 APIs and then translate them into CloudStack APIs. So that gives you a smoother transition into using your private cloud.
Okay, so it's not that Cloud Stack interacts directly with EC2. It's that your APIs can understand EC2 style API calls, so that someone can pretty easily repoint all of their existing provisioning tools over to Cloud Stack.
That's right. We actually even have a public cloud provider trying to do that too. So.
Very cool.
So you can effectively build with that proxy, you can build a private EC2 clone so that you can move your EC2 workload into your private cloud once EC2 becomes too expensive.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I've got one more. I just thought of something. So in terms of using this in an environment that requires billing, are there kind of modules or hooks built into this to take kind of metrics away and statistics away and then actually convert that into an end user bill for running a certain amount of resources?
Yeah, so CloudStack has a built-in usage server. So every time you start, stop a VM or create a volume, or it records all that in the usage database. The amount of network traffic you pump through and so on and so forth. And then what you do is you just parse that user's database and then build your own billing system. Or you can purchase something called a Cloud Portal Business Manager from Citrix, which does exactly that for you. It figures out the taxes and the currencies and all that, and then lets you build a nice customer relationship CRM system as well.
Okay, thank you.
So my next question then is, how do I get my feet further in with CloudStack? I mean, I don't have my own public cloud that I'm building. I'm just a guy, probably like many listeners to the podcast here, who's just trying to keep on top of everything that's going on. So, you know, how would I dip my toes into CloudStack and get it kicking and learn more about it?
Yeah, so if you go to cloudstack.org, there's links for downloads. Either you can download the source and build it, or you can even, there's RPMs available. And then you can get started with a single KVM host. That would be the simplest. And then go from there.
Okay, so you can kind of build a lab pretty simply, just one KVM host and a host running CloudStack.
Exactly. So you'd run CloudStack and the hypervisor and everything, yeah.
Right, okay.
By the way, has anyone built CloudStack as an appliance, like an OVA or OVF, that I can download and just run it?
That's a great question. I do know that somebody has built it, but I believe it's at an older version. It's like at a 4.2 or a 4.3. But I can dig up the links for that.
So it's not something that you would offer as part as standard distribution?
No, that's not a standard. So as part of the Apache project, Apache always only releases source. They never release binaries. So that's the output of the project. And then it's up to interested individuals or organizations to offer binaries or appliances.
But you said there's RPMs, right? So I could just fire up a Red Hat server or something like that, and load it that way, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, if I want to contribute to the project, I have this great idea and I would like to see this implemented or even code it myself, how can I join the project?
Just jump on the mailing list and the IRC. There's always people, there's a well-defined process for contributing. Typically, you say, hey, you know, I want to do this, and then if it's pretty major, then you know people will say, well, can you write up more about it, document it, put it on the wiki, we'll discuss it. Or if it's small, you know, just send in a patch and then somebody will commit it for you. And as you get more familiar with the community and get more and more recognized, then we'll probably make you a committer so that we can get out of your way and then you can start contributing directly.
Okay. So what's currently popular, which I've noticed, is a lot of these projects have got kind of summits and conferences. Do you have anything similar?
That's right. So we have two. The next one's in Budapest in November.
Oh, I just might be there. It's pretty close.
Yeah, sure. Please come along.
By the way, speaking about futures, what's coming up in the next release and what's on the roadmap that you can talk about?
So the next release has stuff like there's more feature work being done on Hyper-V, I believe. There's some more integrations with storage systems. I think there's the SolidFire storage integration coming. From the networking perspective, the bare metal with the advanced network services is coming, and a few more KVM enhancements and vSphere enhancements.
Perfect. So thanks very much for joining us today, Chiradeep.
My pleasure.
Where can people that are interested in what you do find you? Are you on Twitter? Are you blogging?
Yeah, Twitter is my favorite means of communication. So I'm at Chiradeep.
Ah, so you were early, you got your name.
Yes.
Yeah, I was late. I'm stuck with the lame iOS hints thing.
Likewise, yeah.
And Bob and David, where can people find you? Where are you in the social media?
You can catch me at ipengineer.net, and I'm on the Twitters at LSP42.
And I blog at herdingpackets.net. Usually, I've been on a bit of a hiatus for the summer, but I'm looking to get back to that soon. And I also occasionally have an article post up on networkcomputing.com. And you can also always find me on the Twitters at Bob McCouch.
And finally, I'm Ivan Pipelniak, and you can find me blogging at ipspace.net and follow me on Twitter as at iOSHints, although I don't post much apart from my blog posts. We already mentioned that you can find more about CloudStack at cloudstack.apache.org. Or if you're interested in SDN stuff, go visit ipspace.net/SDN, where you'll get links to SDN-related podcasts like this one, or webinars, workshops, and who knows, you might decide that what you really need is a webinar subscription. Finally, if you like this show, do tell your friends, leave a review on iTunes, and follow us at podcast.ipspace.net.